Are you familiar with K Street? It's a major thoroughfare in Washington, D.C. that happens to be home to some of the country's most prominent lobbying firms. Over the decades, lobbyists have played a hugely influential role in American politics, and one that often takes place in the dark. Here to turn the lights on are Brody Mullins and Luke Mullins, brothers and co-authors of the new book, The Wolves of K Street, The Secret History of How Big Money Took Over Big Government. Brody is an investigative reporter in the Washington, D.C. Bureau of the Wall Street Journal, and Luke is a contributing writer at Politico magazine. Here's Brody to share five of their key insights.
Hello, my name is Brody Mullins. I'm a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter with the Wall Street Journal. My brother Luke and I have written a book called The Wolves of K Street, The Secret History of How Big Money Took Over Big Government. And today, I'm going to give you five key insights from The Wolves of K Street. Insight number one, U.S. corporations have tremendous power in our society and economy, but this wasn't always the case. From the 1930s to the mid-1970s, corporations actually had very little power in Washington and the government. Labor unions, public interest groups, and environmental organizations had tremendous power until much more recently, and they used that power to pass dozens of laws creating new rules and regulations for society and business. They passed laws creating the National Highway Safety Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency and the Civil Rights Act, and on and on and on. For many years, companies accepted and sometimes even supported these new regulations. But in the 1970s, corporations began to feel that they were getting overregulated by the government, and they began to fight back. Companies from American Airlines to Wall Street to healthcare companies began to spend tons of money in Washington on lobbyists and campaign donations in an effort to get more power over lawmakers in order to not only block legislation that would help consumers, but to enact bills that would help companies by, say, lowering their taxes or cutting back on regulations or creating free trade bills with other countries. From the 1970s to the present, companies spent so much money in Washington that they ended up being in near total control of the government. They made friends with both Republicans and Democrats and pretty much could pass any bill they wanted to or block anything they wanted to. The centerpiece of The Wolves of K Street is how corporate America used lobbyists and money to take over the government in Washington to pass bills that help companies and not regular Americans. Insight number two, Washington is full of lobbyists for corporations who are both incredibly colorful and controversial. The first lobbyist was the cigar-chomping son of a set of powerful Washington insiders. His name was Tommy Boggs, and he was the ultimate power broker. He was so connected to Washington and government officials that not just his father, but also his mother, were elected members of Congress. Tommy's father, Hale Boggs, was the second most powerful Democrat in the House of Representatives. He was in line to become the Speaker of the House, which would have made him the most powerful person in Washington. In 1972, he departed on a fundraising trip to Alaska, but his plane disappeared in a snowstorm, and he and the plane were never located. Hale's wife was later elected to replace him in Congress. Tommy was the ultimate insider. He knew nearly every member of Congress on a first-name basis and used to work on Capitol Hill, where one of his jobs was to carry around a glass of scotch for Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was then a senator and later, of course, became president. The relationships that Boggs made in Congress helped him build the most powerful lobbying firm in Washington in his era, because he was friends with all the people he needed to know to get things passed for his clients. But in the 1980s, Republicans won control of Congress and Ronald Reagan became president. That swept into power a group of Republican lobbyists who took over Washington. Among the most prominent was a guy named Paul Manafort. Manafort, years later, would get swept up in a scandal during the Donald Trump era and go to jail. But back in the 1980s, he was one of a small group of Republicans who were hired by companies who wanted to get close to the Republicans who were running Congress, as well as those in Ronald Reagan's White House. Manafort represented the titans of industry in the 1980s, big Wall Street firms, media moguls like Rupert Murdoch, and even Donald Trump himself. Manafort became rich and powerful. He bought expensive mansions and townhouses. He spent tens of thousands of dollars on clothes, but later in life, he went too far and ended up in jail. We also write about a lobbyist named Tony Podesta. Podesta was an art-obsessed lobbyist who built one of the most successful Democratic lobbying firms before collapsing in his own financial scandal that was sparked, in part, by his own ego and his addiction to expensive works of art. Insight number three, the lobbying industry is not what you think it is. For many years, lobbyists like Tommy Boggs scored wins for their major corporate clients by cutting deals with powerful members of Congress in smoke-filled rooms. The cozy relationships between lobbyists and lawmakers were greased with fancy steak dinners, rounds of golf, and big campaign checks. But Washington doesn't work like that anymore, in part because the media is constantly on the lookout for sweetheart deals between lawmakers and corporate lobbyists. The influence business has changed. Much, but not all, of lobbying today is now focused far outside of Washington. Because lawmakers are constantly running for re-election, they're very sensitive to what their voters' opinions are on issues. In order to get re-elected, lawmakers know they need to do things that a majority of their constituents want them to do. Lobbyists for corporations have figured that out. So sometimes, instead of lobbying a lawmaker directly, lobbyists run public relations campaigns in a lawmaker's home district in order to try to persuade a majority of voters to support what the company wants. For example, a few years ago, big retail companies like Walmart and Best Buy wanted to pass legislation to cap the transaction fees that credit cards could charge on purchases. These fees essentially made buying things at stores more expensive for customers and drove down sales at retail stores. So they wanted to pass a law to cap these fees. It should be no surprise that the companies that made money from those fees, credit card companies like Visa and MasterCard, opposed this cap on their fees. So when lobbyists at the retail stores couldn't get a majority of lawmakers to enact their bill, they moved their lobbying effort out to the states. They ran ads on TV telling constituents that the things they were buying at stores were artificially expensive due to these credit card fees. Voters found that appalling, and in turn wrote letters and sent emails to their members of Congress telling them to support the new bill. That's just one example of how lobbying today has moved from an insider game in Washington to an outsider game focused on voters like you. Insight number four, companies often use reporters and the media as part of their Washington lobbying efforts. Washington reporters can often play an important, if unknowing, role in campaigns by corporate lobbyists to get Congress and federal agencies to enact policies that benefit corporate America. Smart corporate lobbyists know that members of Congress and their aides are often suspicious of pitches they get from lobbyists, but government officials can be influenced by what they read in the Washington media. That means that reporters who cover Congress and government agencies for publications like the Washington Post, Politico, or Roll Call can impact the support or opposition to various pieces of legislation by what they write. If a reporter for Politico writes a story saying that momentum is growing for a plan to enhance fuel efficiency standards, for example, that can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, as more members of Congress are likely to lend their support for the bill. In contrast, a news story saying that a pro-industry bill is about to go down in flames may cause a lawmaker to ditch his or her support for the measure in order to avoid being associated with a public failure. As a result, there's a small and growing niche of corporate lobbyists who spend their days trying to influence what reporters write on behalf of well-paying corporate clients. These media consultants try to build friendly relations with influential reporters by taking them to dinner, paying for drinks, or bringing them to baseball games. Because journalists are not public officials, they're not subject to the government's ethics rules that prohibit them from receiving gifts, meals, and other favors. Once a lobbyist has created a trusted relationship with a reporter, the lobbyist tries to persuade the reporter to include information in their stories that's beneficial to their corporate clients, or to abandon a story that doesn't advance the cause of a company. One of the earliest adopters of this type of media lobbying is an operative named Jim Cordovich. For about a decade, Cordovich threw lavish parties for his friends in the media, government officials, and corporate offices. He even dated a well-known Washington reporter, a move that made many reporters feel more comfortable attending his parties. After befriending reporters at the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and elsewhere, he signed up a roster of corporate clients and foreign governments that wanted to influence what those reporters wrote. One of his clients, Goldman Sachs, paid him as much as $50,000 a month for his services. The government of Ethiopia later hired him for $1.6 million for just 1 year's work. Insight number five. This book was inspired when police found a dead body just off the 18th green at an exclusive golf resort outside of Washington. On a warm summer evening in July 2015, the staff at the exclusive Robert Trent Jones Golf Club outside of Washington were busy preparing the course for a professional golfing event sponsored that year by Tiger Woods. Robert Trent Jones is one of the premier golf courses in Washington, D.C. It costs about $150,000 to join, and its membership was limited to just a few hundred people so that members would never have to wait in line to tee off. Members include some of Washington's top corporate lobbyists, politicians, and dignitaries. When President Obama left the White House in 2017, one of the first things he did was to sign up to join the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club. On that day, July 8, 2015, the sun was about to set when one of the club's staffers patrolling the course heard what sounded like a gunshot. At first, he thought it came from some hunters from across the way. A few moments later, another shot rang out. A few hours later, a server from the club's restaurant went down to the fire pit near the 18th hole to check on a patron. The patron had played a round of golf by himself that day before ordering a bottle of wine that cost $1,500 and retiring to a white Adirondack chair by the fire pit. The server had briefly chatted with the man and nothing seemed amiss, but when the staffer went to check on the man around sundown, he found that the man was slumped in his chair. He wore a black sports jacket, white dress shirt, gray slacks, and black loafers. On the left arm of the chair was a burnt cigar. On the grass next to him was his empty bottle of wine. Then the server noticed bloodstains on the man's shirt, a gunshot wound in his head, and a silver Smith & Wesson .357 pistol. Unraveling what happened to the man that day was more than a mystery for local law enforcement. It turned out that the dead man's story and how he wound up with a bullet in his skull just off the 18th green at the exclusive golf course helps explain how the city's corporate lobbying industry has evolved from a sleepy industry based on relationships and insider deals to a sophisticated and lucrative influence ecosystem where billions of dollars flow freely with little accountability or oversight from the government, public, or even the companies themselves.
Thank you, Brody. That was five big ideas from The Wolves of K Street, The Secret History of How Big Money Took Over Big Government by Brody Mullins and Luke Mullins. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.